content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Demi Arsenault from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Lion Magazine. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the September 2022 issue of Lion Magazine. And we'll begin today with the President's message, titled, The Many Ways We Serve. Hello, Lions. Just like we are all a little unique, or maybe even a lot unique, so is the way that we serve. We are so diverse as Lions, and the people we serve are equally diverse. How I approach my service is based on what I saw my father do as a Lion and what my town needs from me today. How you approach service will be based on your background and what is needed in your community. And this is one of the many things I love about Lions. Having many ways in which we approach the world is a tremendous asset. Lions have so many different special skills and attributes that make us what we do special. And I absolutely love seeing how each and every one of you put your strengths to good use, especially when it is in the service of our global causes or the local causes you serve. Whether it's using your carpentry know-how to build ramps for those in wheelchairs or putting your party planning chops into high gear to put together the perfect fundraiser, your unique approach to the service is the core of our strength as a global service organization. When you're a Lion, you really can be you. Take it from me, someone who's always just a little bit outside of the box. Be your amazing selves, Lions. Because we're stronger for it. Yours in service, Brian E. Sheehan, International President of Lions Clubs International. And we're going to move into our Global Service Department. Beginning in Canada, on the road again. Near or far, truckers never misses a meeting. Alvin Bouchard may be miles from home and days away from seeing family and Lion friends in Nova Scotia, Canada. But he carries his Lion heart in his big rig, delivering kindness all over North America. The owner and operator of Total Logistics Trucking in Prince Edward Island, Canada, has been a long-haul trucker since 1994. About 18 months ago, he became a charter member of the Nova Scotia Cyber Lions Club, where club president Kim Stewart says he has missed only one of their weekly meetings. Bouchard doesn't have to be physically present at meetings to be a Lion. He is serving, doing good deeds wherever and whenever he stops. That can be anywhere in the Canada or the U.S., delivering everything from peanuts to bubblegum. He has traveled through every state except Kansas and Oregon. Little acts of kindness seem to be a big deal, says Bouchard by phone from an Arkansas restaurant where he took a break from the road and waited for his ice cream cone. There was an older woman going into the mall, and I opened the door for her. She was still talking about it 2 weeks later. It wasn't anything I thought was a big deal. Occasionally, I go in and eat somewhere and pay for someone else in there, especially if they have children with them. Yeah, I've been known to pay for the car behind me, he says. Last Christmas, there was a family going to return groceries at the counter in Walmart because they didn't have the money, so I just paid the rest for them. Belonging to a virtual club allows him to do these things quietly as he prefers. There is no recognition needed, he says. The people have already said thank you. Stewart says the Cyber Club allows Bouchard to attend meetings and have a sense of belonging to a service club, which, as a long-haul trucker, wasn't afforded to him before. His ideas are great at enriching our Lions Club. Bouchard thanks Stewart, a longtime friend, for bringing him into the Lions, for encouraging a lot of young people to join, and for accepting new ideas. He may only get home to see them in person for a few days every 3 months, but basically I'm at the meetings, he says. With the phone, I can still talk in the meeting. I can be a part of the meeting, and I can give my input. As a child growing up on Prince Edward Island, where his parents worked on a potato farm, Bouchard never knew much about Lions except that his mother would go to Lions bingos. Next door was a family where the father was a farmer and a potato salesman who taught him to drive a tractor and truck at a young age. "They spoiled me rotten," remembers Bouchard. "They treated me really well. Now I look at it as time to give back." Sometimes it's a challenge getting people to accept his generosity. Some people will say they don't want charity. Others are still keeping socially distant. "There was one individual. He didn't like that I paid for his dinner. I had no idea who he was. But then I said, 'I'm a lion, and it's just an act of kindness.' And he was okay with that," Bouchard says. "I'll just find that if I say, 'I'm Alvin Bouchard, I'm a lion, and I'd like to help with your groceries,' it's better. Saying 'I'm a lion' expands the number of people who are open to receiving just a little kindness." All right, and our next article from our Global Service Department is also from Canada, titled "Mud and Mayhem: Annual Bush Race Builds Character and Friendships." Members of the Omagouan Highlands Lions Club don't mind getting down and dirty for a good cause. The club, based in Strong Township, Ontario, hosts an annual bush race every August at the Copeman Tree Farms in Sundridge, Ontario. Past district governor Bill Copeman owns the land and graciously lets me dig holes for water and mud, says Jocelyn Modell, charter president and current club president. Those words, mud, water, and holes, should be signs that this 5K obstacle run is no ordinary race. It's bush races that draw 150 adults and children who use their muscle and willpower to conquer more than 15 obstacles and challenges on a course that features mud, lots of mud, along with an axe throw, archery, climbing walls, Tarzan ropes, cargo net, and tractor tires to scramble over, up, down, under, or through. "Our race is a true bush race, which is fun for racers because once you leave the start line, you head up into the trees and spectators don't see you again until you come back out," Modell says. "And it's a sure bet you'll come back muddy after tackling the course's varied terrain of hills, groomed farm trails, and rugged bush." Proving that the organizers, which includes about 25 to 30 volunteers, have a sense of humor, the club posts signs throughout the course to keep participants smiling. "Our rope wall has a sign that says, 'Don't worry, Humpty Dumpty had wall problems too,'" says Modell. "After the racers come up the first big hill, there's another sign that says, 'If you're feeling it now, you're in trouble later.'" Modell says it is inevitable that participants, who are both trained and amateur athletes, will build camaraderie as they complete the course. "The camaraderie comes between each racer as both friends and strangers conquer these obstacles together," Modell says. "It's natural if you're crawling through the mud, falling in the mud, pulling your best friend through the mud, losing your shoe, getting into extremely cold water, or holding your husband's legs as he scrambles across the monkey rings that he hasn't practiced since doing elementary school." The race, which is the club's one big fundraiser, brings in roughly $4,000 Canadian dollars, which is equivalent to $3,200 U.S. dollars, and that goes to wherever there is a need in the community. In the past, the club has supplied free athletic equipment to local schools, donated to Christmas cheer baskets for families in need during the holidays, donated to food banks, and provided free hockey clinics for children. Modell says racers often thank the club for organizing the event because they never thought they'd be able to complete something like it. "Finishing the course while having fun is an accomplishment, and the effect of taking on such a challenge lasts long past race day. When racers finish, they are instantly empowered to take on the next challenge in their lives because they just did things that they never thought they could do or would have even tried doing without signing up," Modell says. "Now they have the courage to tackle whatever life throws at them." And next, we're going to stop over in Pennsylvania in the United States with "The Carnival Must Go On." When their clubhouse burned to the ground, Lions improvised to keep their yearly fundraiser going. When a fire tore through the historic former school building in Dauphin, Pennsylvania, the Middle Paxton Lions Club lost nearly everything it needed to put on their annual fundraiser, a community carnival that they'd hosted for about 60 years. All of the items we needed for the carnival were stored there, and that's also where we met, says Brian Cuddy, president of the club. When the October 2021 blaze consumed the two-story brick structure that dated from the 1860s, the whole town was down there and watched it burn. It was very sad, he says. The fire gutted the building that had operated as a school until the 1970s and later housed community organizations, including the Lions Club. No one was injured in the fire, but much of the community's historic archives, including photographs and other memorabilia, burned, as did most of the Lion Club's tarps, tents, stands, games, and a kitchen that it had used to provide food for carnival goers. The club took time to grieve the loss. For the remainder of 2021, we were unsure what we were going to do, Cuddy says. There was an overwhelming sense of sadness in the community. Eventually, the Lions decided they didn't want to disappoint the town of about 1,000 people by canceling the carnival, which Cuddy jokes is the social event of the season. The club, which now meets in a church, still had a contract with a company to provide the amusement rides, which was a good starting point. We started saying, I think we can do this, he says. It's not going to be the same. We're going to have to make some changes, but we know our community looks forward to it. The club was able to pull two burned game wheels from the wreckage and rehab those, but everything else had to be reimagined from scratch. The Lions rented tents and purchased new tables and chairs. They arranged for food trucks to provide most of the food and asked craftspeople to rebuild games and rallied local businesses and other community organizations to help. The club had to install a telephone pole to provide electricity to the carnival area and run water from a nearby school. They went to great lengths to bring back some of the crowd's favorite games and food. One of the things people really liked at our carnival was our pizza, Cuddy says. This year, we made it at a local church and then carted it by golf cart to the carnival. He says the club wasn't sure until the last minute whether or not it would all work. It was very gratifying on the first night to see that it all came together, he says. Paula McKee, president of the Dauphin Middle Paxton Home Association, appreciates what Lions do and was glad to pitch in. The association donated $10,000, which was used to defray the cost of ride tickets. Purchasing a wristband for rides cost $20, but was only $5 for kids 12 and under. The Lions do great things for the community, McKee says. And it's a small community, so we help each other. The event, which usually raises about $15,000, took place in mid-July. One surprising twist that came from the tragedy was an increase in the club's membership. The Middle Paxton Lions added 9 new members since the carnival, for a total of 40. I think it really put a light on us and what we do that we didn't have before, says Cuddy. Next, we're going to move on over to our features department with catching frogs. Camp Freedom offers a respite for kids and the grandparents who care for them. An hour or so after arriving at summer camp, 7-year-old Brian is in tears. Spotting Kathy, Brian launches himself into her arms, repeating between choked sobs, "I want to go home." Kathy has a son named Brian. But he isn't the blonde little boy who has wrapped his arms around her. He is the boy's father. This younger Brian is her grandson. Kathy doesn't take her grandchildren fishing or for sleepovers on Saturday nights like some grandparents. Instead, she cares for him full time. She is the only mother Brian's ever really known. She's also raising Brian's older sisters, Marnie, who's 13, and Miley, who's 11. She wishes she could be more of a true grandmother to them, but she's also grateful she's there to be the mother they don't have. Their mother is missing. She disappeared while hitchhiking in 2017. Their father, Kathy's son, has a drug addiction. In 2016, Brian Jr. was found alone with no clothes on, having crossed a busy street to reach a convenience store. News reports described the toddler as being very hungry and his mother as being high on drugs. It was Kathy who came to get Brian Jr. that day. She was already caring for his older sisters. The kids call her Gran-Gran. She's 59 with gray hair and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, also known as COPD. She spent much of her life working in factories and now survives on disability and food stamps. If camp wasn't free, she wouldn't be able to afford it. While the kids spend a week fishing, swimming, crafting in Lebanon Junction, Kentucky, Kathy will be 25 miles south at home in Louisville, doing nothing. She repeats the word, nothing, just do me. Enabling caregivers to do nothing is one of the missions of Camp Freedom, providing a week of rest for foster parents and family members caring for children that are not their biological children can be a priceless luxury for these families. Founded in 2006 in partnership with Kentucky foster care agencies, Camp Freedom is the largest of four free week-long camps held each summer at Lions Camp Crescendo, a 185-acre camp facility Kentucky Lions have been operating as a nonprofit since 1996. Like the other free children's camps, for those who are visually impaired, hearing impaired, and those infected or affected by HIV/AIDS, Camp Freedom is designed to serve Kentucky children who are not otherwise being served. Operating the camps at Lions Camp Crescendo is one of the Kentucky Lions' two major projects. For Lions Camp Crescendo administrator Billy Flannery, it's something more. Flannery has been with Camp Crescendo from the start, living on the property much of the time. A lion and lioness for so long she's lost count, either 35 or 45 years, Flannery has never held office in the organization. I hate bureaucracy, she says. I hate politics. Awards are also something the tough octogenarian ignores, although she has received an International President's Certificate of Appreciation and a Melvin Jones Fellowship Award. That's immaterial, she says. That's not why I do this stuff. She does it for the kids. As the oldest of seven children, Flannery has spent much of her life taking care of kids, first her siblings, then her own. She had two children. Her son died of a virus when he was 20 months old. Her daughter, Lisa Bellamy, is the camp nurse. Then there is her foster daughter, Marie, a teenager who lived with her for 2 years around 50 years ago. During that time, Marie was like Flannery's shadow, trying to learn everything she could from her. When Marie left at 18, Flannery thought she would be okay. Then she got a phone call. Marie was in jail. Next came a letter from a women's prison. Later, Marie called to say she was married and living in another state. Flannery hasn't heard from her since. I've wondered lots of time where she is and what she's doing, says Flannery. At camp, Flannery doesn't have to wonder how the children are doing. Many of them return each summer, especially those being cared for by their grandparents. There are more of them each year. Grandparents take on parenting duties. At camp this summer, about half of the 60 children were being raised by their grandparents. In Kentucky, 1,300 kids are in out-of-home care with relatives, says Eric Friedlander, Secretary of the Kentucky Cabinet for Health and Family Services. He believes that there are even more that aren't reported. Some children's advocates underestimate the number to be as high as 70,000. It isn't just Kentucky where children are being raised by relatives other than their parents. Around the nation, apparently 2.7 million children live with their grandparents or family members other than their parents, according to the 2020 State of Grand Families report by Generations United, a network of organizations dedicated to improving the lives of children and older adults. According to the same report, more than 30%, around 133,405 of all the children in foster care in the United States are being cared for by family members, a number that has increased by 8 percentage points in the last decade. One reason for the increase is growing recognition of the advantages of keeping children within their extended families. Another reason is the skyrocketing opioid epidemic and other associated addictions. And when parents end up on drugs, grandparents, often with limited mobility and income, end up caring for their grandchildren, a task that often proves much more physically demanding the second time around. So having this Camp Freedom is a great opportunity, says Friedlander. But camp is still all about the kids. For many of the children ages 6 to 15, this is the big thing for the year, says Camp Freedom director Daniel Coe. In the weeks before camp begins, Brian's sister Marnie was already counting down. 20 more days until camp. On the second day of camp, Marnie is lined up for archery with Shauna, aged 14. They wear their brown hair in matching Dutch braids and spend more time talking than trying to hit the bullseye. 4 years ago, when Marnie first came to camp, she worried she wouldn't make friends. But like everyone comes up to you and talks to you, so you don't even have to worry about it, she says. Unlike other places where people ask why and a bunch of questions when she tells them she lives with her grandmother, at camp, no one says anything. They understand she is stable and doesn't have to worry about anything when she's with her grandmother. Shauna remembers having to care for her little brother before she went to live with her grandparents in Louisville. That was around 8 or 9 years ago. Shauna started attending camp soon after. Her grandparents worried that she would have separation anxiety and call home daily. They never heard a word. Next year, Shauna wants to become a counselor in training. She lists off the other children and counselors who've been coming to camp for years. It's like a family, she says. Kids like me. Shauna's own family is more complicated. She hasn't seen her little brother since she began living with her grandparents. Her grandfather, Chuck, remembers Shauna coming back from her first camp announcing, "Grandpa, there are a lot of kids like me." From that point on, she doesn't have to feel like she's the only one, says Miller. It's a great venue for those kids. Shauna has anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress disorder. Talking with friends is what keeps her sane. When I came to camp, I realized I wasn't the only kid going through what was going on, she says. And there's a lot of kids that have it a lot worse. Camp nurse Lisa Bellamy sees the result of trauma and loss in the behavior and medications that many of the children who come to Camp Freedom. In some ways, the Freedom children are more difficult to handle than the children with physical disabilities that she works with in other camps. You can't slap a Band-Aid on an oppositional defiance disorder child, she says. It just doesn't work. It takes a lot of finesse and patience and love. Lions bring in the love. Among those doling out the love are plenty of Lions. Bellamy is one of them. It was the camp that brought her to the organization. After seeing members of Lexington South Lions Club cooking, cleaning, and repairing at the camp, she decided to join the club. Then she recruited two more counselors to join her. Camp Crescendo board chair David Moose belongs to the Louisville East Lions Club, as do the directors of the camp for blind and vision impaired youth. Lions don't only give their time, they also give money. Flannery estimates that Lions fund about 30% of the cost of Camp Freedom. The rest comes from grants and donations and renting the facilities from other camps. COVID-19 meant that there were no camps in 2020 and thus no revenue stream from other paying camps. Because money is pooled, it is hard to determine the cost of individual camps, but food alone for Camp Freedom was $6,000 or $7,000 in 2021. And that was with 40% fewer campers. Then there's electricity, water, gas, and two employees, a cook and a lifeguard. Pretty much everyone else is a volunteer, including Billy Flannery's husband, Don Flannery, who can be found most weekends on site taking care of maintenance issues. Like his wife, Don is 82 and belongs to Frankfurt Lions Club. He hasn't had a weekend off in years, and it has been more than a decade since he and his wife have had time to relax at a home they have in Florida. For Billy, camp and Lions are intertwined. Service is what Lions are about. Find me a better way than serving children, and I'll join that effort too, says Billy. Divide and conquer. Among those children is Jackson B., a red-headed 8-year-old who can't read and had to repeat the first grade. His grandmother, Jennifer, who's 56 years old, has watched him struggle. She believes some of his delays are a result of what happened to him before she and her husband, Greg, who is 62, started caring for Jackson when he was 15 months old. While under the care of her oldest son, James, and his girlfriend, she says, Jackson was left in a playpen in front of a television and fed only a bottle with no solid food. James had been diagnosed with schizophrenia in his 20s, and the medicine he was prescribed caused extreme weight gain and left him lethargic, so he stopped taking it and started self-medicating, according to Jennifer. By the time Jennifer realized how bad things were, James and Jackson's mother were on heroin, and Jackson was on his own, jumping around in a playpen. He could do flips, stand on his head, but he couldn't walk because that's what he was used to, says Greg. The couple, who live about 45 miles south of Louisville, worked on coaching their grandson up. I don't really have any friends my age because they're going on trips. They're approaching retirement, says Jennifer. Meanwhile, she is taking Jackson to the fair and swimming lessons, struggling to keep the active boy busy. We do the divide and conquer, says Greg. One of them will watch Jackson jump into the pool shouting cannonball. The other will take him to the lake to walk. Trying to keep up with the little boy, whom Jennifer describes as being driven by a motor, became even more difficult during the pandemic, with Jackson struggling to learn remotely. Raising her grandson, says Jennifer, is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. A few hours later, Jackson is pouring Dixie cups of water over his head to keep cool in the heat, a huge smile on his face. The next morning, Brian is thumb wrestling another little boy at breakfast. His older sister, Marnie, is off on her own, keeping her eyes on the ground. I'm not really into the activities. I'm just into getting frogs, she says. Everyone here is unique and different, says Shauna. Some are quiet, some are hyper. Some like to be alone, some in big groups. What they have in common is they all support each other, says Shauna. Kind of like a family. And we have run out of time for today's episode of Lion Magazine. Be sure to tune in next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Demi Arsenault for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for the print and visually impaired audience. Lion Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. And again, that number is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, and have a wonderful day.